Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
I invite you to take a conscious inhalation and a conscious exhalation, using the breath as a way to connect to Source, knowing that the words spirit and breath are synonymous. And so when the breath becomes conscious, we might infer that spirit is waking up within us. An eternal spirit, a spirit that was never born, a spirit that never dies, and yet a spirit that is always there. And as my friend Barry said, sometimes when I feel that spirit alive in me, I feel tingles down my spine. Maybe my body will start to shake. Is that a consequence of this awakening? In my case, when spirit awakens, I find a smile forming in my heart, and then that smile begins to move to my lips, and then the smile moves up into my eyes, and then my whole body feels like it's smiling. It's different for all of us. And so by the simple act of ringing the bell and stopping our doing, we arrive at the sacred moment that is always waiting for us. And as we open to the mystery of belonging to the universe, well, then life itself is waking up. And we witness it. It's always new. It's always fresh. And so the invitation this Sunday morning is for us to be endlessly surprised at what the moment provides. I hear the Bible that says, this is the moment the Lord has made. Rejoice and be glad in it. What if all we ever have is the moment? And sometimes the moment can surprise us in ways that feel uncomfortable. But if we can embrace that discomfort, well, then maybe that discomfort is moving us in a new direction. And so the discomfort is necessary for us to change, not an evil word anymore, but a beloved word. I am safe, it's only change. And change is happening all around us. And hopefully it's happening within us. And as we embrace this emerging sense of the One, we are home. So I invite you to open your eyes now, gently, and look around at your own self. So many beautiful aspects of the oneself. Oh, you talk about endlessly surprised. I'm seeing faces I haven't seen in a very long time, and I just want to run down the aisle and throw my arms around that beautiful lady back there. I'll never forget when she came to my front porch, and she was going to have a baby, and she said, I don't think I can do it. And I said, if you don't think you can, you can't. But if you think you can, you can. And she has the most beautiful daughter. And what an inspiration. Endlessly surprised to see Susan and Avery Burdett, the original musicians here at the center, back visiting. You know, I've always flown by the seat of my pants. That's the way David does ministry. And I never seem to have the system in place. And so when people show up, And they say, can I play the piano? He would come from a gig on Saturday nights and he'd bring in his music. And before that, I had Judy Graff playing the piano because, you know, you get your talent wherever it comes. And I'm not going to get up and dance for you, though. I do draw the line there. Or maybe I will. I don't know. Yeah, so this month, I love picking a theme for the month. And the theme I chose this month is the endless practice. You never arrive at the finish line. In fact, it was Marilyn Ferguson that said the spiritual path is an eternal journey with no final destination. So you don't get to a place where you've arrived at this place where you've got it all figured out. No, you always end up in the moment and you meet life on life's terms. I learned this from a person in recovery. Instead of meeting life on my terms, I get to meet life on life's terms. And sometimes life gives us a 2x4. Anybody had a 2x4? Oh, I can see a few out there. And was the 2x4 necessary? Raise your hand.
Yes.
Okay. So it wasn't a bad 2x4. It was an essential 2x4. And then you go, okay, so, you talk about endlessly surprised. I should not choose my titles in advance because I've been surprised all day yesterday. It started with the phone call from my little sister who's still grieving my twin's death. And surprisingly, I listened to her narrative of grief. But what made it so fresh for me was she has a 3-year-old grandson named Will. And she said, Will has become my guru because this little child doesn't have filters. He doesn't know what no is. And so instead of when he goes to the bathroom, instead of saying, don't come in, she has taught him as the grandmother to say, please honor my privacy. So now he says, please honor my privacy. And he's in the bathroom doing his business. Half an hour later, please honor my privacy. Well, Grandma said, Grandma's got to use the bathroom, Will. So Will opens the door and he's sitting there with a tube of toothpaste that he's eaten the whole tube of toothpaste. And she said, Will. And then he said to her, Oma, that's German for grandma. He said, Om. He calls her Om. He said, Om. He said, Sadie. Sadie was eating it. Sadie did it, the little dog. And she said, Will. Did Sadie screw off the cap on the toothpaste tube and squeeze it down her throat? No, he said. So is that true, Will? No, Om, it's not true. And she said, you know, there are consequences for eating a whole tube of toothpaste. She says, you may not feel well later. Of course, half an hour later, he has a stomach ache. Om, I got a stomach ache. And she said, and why do you think that is, Will? Because I ate the toothpaste. And then she said, Will's in some kind of school they send 3-year-olds to. So she calls him and said, how was school today? Did you have a lot of fun? Well, there were ups and downs, he said. Well, what were the downs? She said. Well, they told me not to tackle the kids anymore. Will tends to run up to kids and throw his arms around him and for a hug, and he knocks them over because he's a big kid and he kept knocking the kids over and knocking the kids over. So the teacher said, stop tackling the children. So Om said, why don't you give him a high five, Will? And that's acceptable. So she taught him the high five. And then she said, well, what was the good thing? Did you get any stars, any smiley faces from the teacher today? He said, yes, I did. And she said, what did you do to get the smiley faces? He said, I just took the stickers. Will. And she said, Scott, she calls me Scott, that's my middle name, you're going to just love Will because he's filled with narratives that you won't believe a 3-year-old has. And I said, I can see that right now. And then as I'm talking to her, I'm looking up in the front porch of the house, and there's a robin who's made this little nest on this tiniest of perches. I mean, it couldn't be any bigger than this. And she's made her rather not very well-made nest. Robins, they don't make great nests. But anyway, it's sitting up there with 3 little baby robins in, and the mother is going back and forth and back and forth, and it's on the front porch. Now, I have to go in and out of the house, and I know the mother's looking at me, and I said, I'm going to leave you alone. I honor you. You're a great mom. Do what you do. And I have to tell you, it's so magical to just sit in the rocking chair and watch this mother tend her little babies. We can learn a lot from nature if we slow down long enough to see how we're so all interconnected. The other surprise I had was I heard the lady delivering the mail scream out in the front of the house. So I went outside and don't treat for being endlessly surprised because you're going to get them coming out the wazoo. So she's screaming in my front yard. She's the one who moved here from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, because she wanted a red state. I said, well, I hate to tell you, but Idaho's pretty red, but it's redder here, maybe. Anyway, she's screaming because a snake slithered across the sidewalk. A little garden snake had slithered. You got snakes, don't you, Barbara? Well, it scared the bejeebies out of her. She said, do you know you have a snake in your yard? I said, you know, I've never seen the snake. Where did you see him? She said, well, he's in your plants. I said, well, that's his home, I guess. Just be careful when you deliver the mail. That's all I have to say. One surprise after another. I said, we have chipmunks, too, and they love to run between your legs. So if you see a chipmunk run between your legs, you don't have to scream. We've tamed them. They're our pets. So, yeah, so the first Sunday I talked about tending our garden and in this eternal practice, and maybe that's all we're here to do, is to tend the garden of your consciousness, the garden of your soul, the garden of your life. Mary, Mary, quite contrary, how does your garden grow, you know? Are you planting seeds of anger, seeds of judgment, or are you planting seeds of forgiveness, seeds of acceptance, seeds of courage? My little friend Miriam there, she said she used to be an agoraphobic and was terrified of everything, and now she's found that change, and especially change, now change has become her friend. It's magical. So she has tended a new garden. She stepped out of the garden of fear and distrust and anxiety into the garden of playfulness and service and embracing the moment instead of running away from the moment. So what if when we tend a new garden, we'll reap a new demonstration? It's all so, so beautiful. And you know, the funny thing with gardens is we set an intention, but then we can't determine the outcome. They say that in the Bhagavad Gita, they say, you're not the doer, spirit is the doer. And then they say, have no attachment to the outcome of your labor. So when you, I love, talk about endlessly surprised. I went to Garvin's Feed and Seed. If you haven't been there, it's a trip. It's 100 years old and they sell horse things and, oh, just every kind. They have ducks and chicken in cages. If you want to buy a chicken or a duck, that's where you go. And I went there to get some garden supplies and they had packets of free seeds. I guess they had swept them off the floor. They do seeds in bulk. So the seeds had been swept off the floor and there was a manila thing that said free seeds to anybody who wants it with a smiley face. So I took the frees home and I opened them and they're all there and I don't know what they are, but there's some pink seeds here. There's some little black seeds here. I could tell maybe there's a cucumber here and a squash here. So I just started spreading them in the garden, in the planters. Now I've got who knows what growing in all my planters. I think they're greens, turnip greens, mustard greens, collard greens. I don't know. And so I'm going to be feeding you all something that you don't know what it is. And you're going to say, oh, it's delicious. And what is it, David? I don't know. Isn't that great? So Trey made a big batch of the I don't know last night. And I have some radishes. He scraped some radishes on top and a few shrimp. And we had the, I don't know, best dinner I've had in forever, because isn't that amazing? When you don't know, you're set free from the need to know. And then my Zen calendar this morning said, I am never lost because I have no destination.
Whoa, I think that's kind of special, isn't it?
If you have a destination and you don't make it, well, then you say, I didn't make my goal. But if you have no destination, well, then you arrive in the sacred moment and you're free. And so the second week I spoke about always beginning. This journey is always beginning. We don't ever arrive anywhere. We arrive in the sacred moment. So choose you this day, in this moment, who you're going to serve. Are you going to serve the higher self, the part that's connected with all life, or are you going to serve the me person? And so what I've discovered in my 74 years on this planet, it's about moving from the me into the we and ultimately into the all, that it's all you. That there's no spot where God is not. So you see God in the trees, and you see it in the snakes slithering across the pathway. You see it in the little bunny rabbit that's jumping. You see it in the little birds in the nest and the mother who's nurturing those babies. How are we different than them? You've got your two little kids. You're like the papa bird feeding the baby birds. It's the one life, nurturing itself, loving itself, and it's always beginning. You hear the Bible again. Behold, I make all things new. So could we step into this newness, this new call to be who we are? I love to quote Bernie Siegel, who wrote Love, Medicine, and Miracles. When I saw him, he was given an honorary doctorate in religious science, I think in 1985, and he came to the Atlanta church where I was a student. And Bernie Siegel stood up there, and he said something that I took to heart. He said, be who you is and not who you ain't. Because if you ain't who you is who you ain't. And if you is who you ain't, well, then you ain't who you is. And in that poor English, I realized that we're here to just be who we are, whatever that might be. If it means you're a crazy musician, then be the crazy musician. If it means you're a neurotic gardener, be the neurotic gardener who throws all kinds of seeds out and doesn't know what he's going. You know those pink seeds? I put them in a pot. And guess what started growing out of the pot of the pink seeds? Corn did. But my friend who waddled, Wanda Gale, came over and she was strolling through the garden looking at all these crazy plants. I said, I think this is corn over here. She said, well, it's not the corn that I'm used to. It has bigger leaves. She said, I think you've got a strange kind of corn. Maybe you're growing popcorn. Well, it looks like a corn plant to me, but I'll feed it to y'all and you'll figure it out later. But isn't it nice to know that we don't have to know? We don't have to have a goal at the end of the tunnel or at the end of this life journey. It's going to emerge in ways that are going to surprise even you. I mean, it surprised me that I ever was a minister. This is the last profession I said I would ever do. It surprised me that I'm with my husband for 50 years. I said, he is the last person I would ever be with. And the other thing is, when I graduated from ministerial school, I said, well, the only place I won't go is Alabama. Well, what do I know? And I've been here for 34 years. So obviously, I don't have a clue how to direct the universe to get what I want, because it's going to give me what I need, and I can be so grateful. So what if what we need is to be not certain, to not really have a game plan, to not have a goal? We're such a goal-oriented society. And then you shift from a goal to an intention. Could my intention be to surrender to a higher intelligence that has a greater idea than little David could ever have? Could I step into that place of trust and allow myself to be guided to experience my oneness with the universe? And that's what's happening. It's getting more and more intimate, and it just feeds me. I don't even have to search for it. The third week, I spoke about, we're here to be here. The sacred moment is all you have. So many people project into the future. So many are dealing with the past. I mean, even my little sister yesterday, for an hour, we spoke about our dysfunctional childhood growing up. And I heard a 65-year-old woman talk about how she was so traumatized by being raised in our family. And I said to her, as lovingly as I could, we were all traumatized. I said, my older brother was traumatized, my twin was traumatized, I guess I was as well. And then she said, but you left when I was 12 years old. I said, yeah, I had to get the hell out of Dodge so I could survive. And she said, well, I felt abandoned. And I said, I know you did, but I never did abandon you. And so even though at age 65 she's going over this trauma that she experienced, I reassured that love was at the core of it, and that she came into that family to bring the light, and she did. She was the unwanted pregnancy, and the unwanted one was brought all the light, all the joy. And you know what's so funny? My twin sister was so crazy, and she misses her so much. I think Will is the reincarnation of our mother, because he is just like our mother. You couldn't control him. He would do the most outrageous things. And you know, she had a little chortle there. And I tried to tell her that, you know, the ones that die are not here in form, but they're still here with us in essence. And so we had that conversation, and that's my experience. We're here to be here. Last week I talked about taking the first step, and it's always the first step. The first step for some of you is to come here for the first time. The first step may be walking out of your house when you were afraid with agoraphobia and you're no longer afraid. That first step can be so frightening sometimes and yet so liberating. I remember when I went into the Religious Science Church in Atlanta. It was 1982, and I had declared to the universe, religion is the opiate of the people, and you're never getting me into one of those. And someone had asked me out to lunch, Sylvia, and so I said, okay, we'll go out to lunch, but first I had to put myself through the ordeal of sitting in a service. And I sat in the back of the room, and this woman, who wasn't even a very gifted speaker, got up there, and she gave a message that I needed to hear at the core of my being. A message that says, you create your own reality. Nobody did anything to you. And so what are you going to create in the future? And so that seeming accident was the most necessary moment. And from then on, every Sunday, you couldn't get me to go out to lunch, because I was sitting there getting the message, having these seed ideas planted. And it's been an eternal practice for me, and even at this stage. So today, we're going to explore the idea of being endlessly surprised and see what I came up with. I'm so honored to be impregnated with my teachers, because most of them are on the other side now. So Kennedy Schultz, he's on the other side. Thich Nhat Hanh, he's on the other side. But yet they're still here with me. Thich Nhat Hanh, one of the things he said was, everything and everyone that you encounter in this lifetime is here for your transformation. Everything and everyone is here for your transformation. And then the kicker was, he said, so use them. Use them. How can I use the scenario that I'm going through for me to be liberated, not to be bound in judgment? And God knows there's a lot happening on the planet right now. There was a lot of it expressed during the revealing service. How can we take that as an avenue for our growth, for our transformation, so that we can have the evolved idea, not the limited idea? And Dr. Ernest Holmes, in our science, we're teaching this thing called you. He talks about how we can navigate in the world, but to know that the you that we are is this greater sense of the me, not the local me, but this universal me. So we're always playing with this sense of false identity. Who am I? And then you hear Tatwa Masi, I am that. We are all that. And so Thich Nhat Hanh was one of the first ones. And then I hear my second teacher, Llewellyn Van Lee, the Sufi teacher, and I think I'm going to teach him in the summertime because he's the one that surprised me on the spiritual journey by throwing me into the fire of love. Ernest Holmes talked a lot about love, but you can give lip service to something, but until you fall into the transformational energy of love, you don't know what it is. So my teacher, Llewellyn Van Lee, he would say things like, be attentive to the moment, because the beloved is revealing itself to you in the moment. So be attentive, be vigilant. And he says, it's not about you, it's never been about you. It's about the one. So could we make our life here about this one and then play music for the one? Not so that I can be glorified. When Bob was playing Clair de Lune, he gets lost in the musician that wrote the music. Is that Debussy that wrote that? Or is it Chopin? All you? Oh, well, Debussy. When he plays it, I feel that he feels the soul of Debussy. You could see him up there, dum, 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 you know, and it's like, and when he does it, I go there with him. And when Avery used to play his jazz, it would transport me into a different place. And when Judy would play the Rainbow Connection, I was transported into a different place. So what if music has the capacity to shift us out of a local place where we're caught up in our thoughts into a felt realization of something bigger? Could we honor a life where we're feeling something bigger? Last week I spoke about this man in San Quentin who was in solitary confinement, and he looked out of the window in his cell and saw a bird in a nest, and the bird and he got bonded. And so when he got out of solitary confinement, he was down in the place they go when they walk around. This little bird that he called Little Hawk flew over to him, and he said, is that you, Little Hawk? And he started making the face, and then Little Hawk started making. And so here he was in his isolation, having an intimate connection with one of God's creatures, and I could say love was there. So what if it's like that? It's this kind of game we're playing with the universe, and it's going to give you everything you need in advance of your asking. So another teacher of mine, when I studied with the Sufis, and Gigi and I went to Istanbul together, in the Quran, they say, this is Allah speaking, he says, am I not your Lord? To which we, the creation, say, yes, we witness you. So what if the universe, Allah, and Allah means the emptiness, what if the emptiness is saying, can you see me? I am here. Lo, I am here. Wheresoever I look, I see the face of God. And our challenge, opportunity, and responsibility is to say, yes, we witness you. I see you there. I see God in the little bird on the nest feeding her things. I see God in the snake slithering across the pathway. I see God in the chipmunks that run between my legs. It's all part of the one life showing itself endlessly anew. We had a really hard freeze here in Alabama, and so many of my plants seem to be dead. And so most people, in their expeditious wanting to clean up the mess, will cut off these plants down. But if you leave them long enough, just like some of you, if you're patient, you'll see that there is life wanting to happen. Oh, there is life in there. Well, there is the potential for change and growth. And so I have Gigi and Raul, this beautiful pine tree and this sassy pomegranate growing next to each other. I thought they were both deader than doornails. And it's so beautiful, Gigi, that the pine tree's got all this new growth. The pomegranate's a little bit further behind, but he's sending up shoots from the bottom. So between the pomegranate sending up the shoots and the pine tree, and I'm standing out there talking to them, and Trey is embarrassed. He says, I hope you're not doing this out loud to the plants. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But you know what? It works. If you believe in life, well, then life has a way of returning, even to those of us that you didn't think it was possible. So could we open to that surprise of a new life? always revealing itself.
When I was in Canada with my prayer partner, he was moving to his float boat, off of his float boat to a littler boat, and he had a big library, and so he was going through the library. He said, David, this book has you written all over it. It's called The Last Barrier. And it's the story of a young man in a London bookstore who meets a Turkish man, and he's blown away with the wisdom of this man from Turkey. Well, the next thing you know, the young man takes a pilgrimage over to Istanbul, and he travels with the Sufis, Gigi, and he has this whole book, it's his travels, places that you and I went, and he's sitting with the sheikhs, and he's doing the whirling dervishes, and he's having this experience, and at the very end of the book, he's with his sheikh, and he's having this transformational experience, and he's endlessly surprised because it's not about him. So his sheikh, let me give you a little taste, you'll feel into this. His sheikh says to this young man, at the end of the book, I want you to imagine that you are walking along a path in a valley. In front of you is a mountain. Near the summit, sitting outside a cave, is the perfect master that is awaiting you, in capital P and capital M. So he's to, in his imagination, to climb this mountain and to meet the perfect master that is waiting for you. Now, this is for all y'all. So it's waiting for you, and you are walking up the path. You are aware with every step of the earth under your feet. The earth is warm, so you take off your shoes so you can feel it more easily. Now, you know in that wonderful story of Moses when the burning bush started speaking to him? Again, it's a metaphor because all life is alive with light and truth. So the bush said to Moses, Moses, take off your shoes. Right where you stand is holy ground. The same idea. When you take off your shoes, and feet represent understanding, so when you take off that which is keeping you from understanding, and you put your bare feet on the earth, well, then the earth starts to speak to you. And the bush started speaking to Moses. Well, he's going to have a similar experience because he's having a direct experience with the One. So he took his shoes off. The earth is warm. Take off your shoes and feel it more easily. Be aware of the deep grass on either side of you. Can you see the butterflies that are feeding on the nectar of the wildflowers? Can you hear the insects and observe carefully? What do you notice as you walk? Are you endlessly surprised? He asks. And then he says, observe carefully what you notice. And now you see that the path starts to ascend up the mountain. And it's a steep path, but you must leave the valley behind now as you start to climb and experience the change of altitude. I am safe, it's only change. He's climbing up the mountains. He says, I became aware of the change as I left the valley behind. The feeling was different. All around me, pine trees pointed to the heavens. Each one was trying to reach for the light. It was dark in the forest. No sun filtered through the trees, and the wind song within the branches was the only sound that I heard. And for a moment, there was fear. And then I heard Hamid, my teacher's voice, within my heart, saying once more, keep walking. You have a long way to go. Don't turn back now. And then he goes on, and all of a sudden, he notices the water and the waterfall, and he's observing the water, and then all of a sudden, the water is observing him. He observed the sun. Well, then the sun was observing him, and so he wasn't separate. He said, I saw that the water was observing me. I was not looking at it, but rather, as I realized that it could see me, that I recognized what it was and what it was saying. I wondered how I could have spent my whole life looking at all these elements in nature and never allowing myself to be seen by nature. Never allowing myself to be seen, never reversing the space. Adam was saying to me that he has a little robin's nest on his front porch, too. And every time he goes out, he acknowledges her, he gives her a whistle, and then she gives a whistle back. So what if she sees him and he sees her, and the opportunity is to do that in our lifetime? So he goes on to say, you have seen so that you may understand and eventually gain mastery of certain aspects of energy. That is all. So breathe deeply, feel yourself purified by the elements of water, and be washed through, and let's go on the journey. So he's taking a simple little experience, a moment with water, and saying how it's transformational. You're not only seeing it, but it is seeing you because you're not separate from one another. And so this whole book takes us to the last barrier. The last barrier is me that thinks I'm separate from you. And he goes on to say, skipping down, as I relaxed into the warmth of the sunlight, I realized that it too had awareness, a voice that could be heard. It was different from that of the earth and different from that of the water, but it too spoke to me and led me to itself. Almost at once I heard sounds, voices calling out to me, "Why go on? Why? What more do you want from this? We will become one again." So he says, I don't really need to meet the master. Nature's speaking to me in its volumes. This is the way Gigi writes her poetry. She listens and this Orphic voice comes through her. So he says, I could feel my whole body aglow, and there was a yearning surging through me that I had not known before, as though some great force had been awakened and was drawing me into itself. Is that called a cosmic consciousness experience, Sylvia? When you're merging with nature and it's calling you to listen and to know that we're one, we're not separate. You talk about a surprising moment. How many of you want to have such a moment? Or is that too intimidating to become one with a butterfly? He said, I felt Hamid, my teacher, tugging at my sleeve and saying, wake up. I'm going to skip over. He says, be breathed. Let the wind breathe you. No more was I breathing, but I was being breathed by the wind. So he's having this direct experience of oneness. You talk about change, Miriam. And, you know, he says there are three principles. I'm not going to give you the whole book, but he says the first one is recognition, recognizing that there is this mysterious something that is courting all of us. The second phase is redemption. We got to heal our stuff. That's why we have our recovery groups. Until you heal your stuff, you're not free. And the third R is a resurrection. We get to have our own resurrection. Now, I spoke on Easter Sunday, as this home says, have your own resurrection. In order to have a resurrection, you have to have a crucifixion. We're talking metaphorically. Something has to die if something is going to give birth. So what if all that dies is the idea of ourself as separate? And when oneness wakes up, well, then everything is speaking to you, the wind, the water, the trees, the air. Are you ready for that, Miriam? Merging with everything? Boy, that's kind of scary. Go back into the closet. He says, do not go back to sleep, whatever you do. Whatever you do, you must be more awake than ever before. You have been allowed to feel the timeless presence of love, will now feel the light of God pouring from the Master into you. And basically, the Master is all of it. The Master isn't something separate. And then you hear the Sufis that say the outer teacher must take you to the inner teacher, and the greatest teacher of all is life. So what if this is all taking us to the Master Teacher within? To the Master Teacher within. The book that I'm thinking of teaching this summer is the newest book of Llewellyn Van Lee, the Sufi teacher, and it's called For the Love of the Real, with a capital R. For the love of this something. Could we love this something that is so much bigger than us more than we get attached to the little R, my little reality? There's an ultimate reality, and then there's a little reality. We get trapped in that little reality, and we fail to realize that this bigger something is courting us. So this young man's having a mystical experience where he's dissolving into oneness, the very last bit. So he says, do not be afraid. Few people are given this opportunity. You have only to surrender to this power that brings everything into being, and you will be safe when you surrender to this something that's greater to you. You know, and then you can say, I have arrived, I am home. I have myself do nothing, Jesus said. It's this power within that doeth the work. He said, what I do, you too shall do and greater. So he was pointing the way to liberation. When I let go of the me and enter into the we, I ultimately realize that I'm part of the all. So this last little bit, he says, again, I opened, letting go of any resistance. And from out of this sound grew a vision of worlds being born, of whole galactic systems bursting into life, of light crystallizing into form. And I heard a voice within myself saying to me, no one understand. For every true act of surrender, for a man or a woman, makes a galactic system exist and is born. Whenever a human being finds his true self, with a big S, a universe bursts into existence. I think he's speaking metaphorically, but isn't it kind of fun to know that when we go home to the truth of who we are, we're part of something so much bigger, and this is the way we can effect change on the planet. Not by clinging to us and creating a better illusion, but by surrendering to this something greater. Know and understand, for every true act of surrender, for a man or woman, makes a galactic system. Okay, now that you have seen and been seen by the universe, you may feel a peace that you've never really known before.
They call it a peace that passes all understanding. You can't figure it out. Why am I so peaceful when there's so much chaos in the world? When people are shooting each other in Texas because they don't like you? Why am I so peaceful? Because I'm not choosing to buy into the crazies. And you know, we need the peacemakers on this planet right now. We do. As the vision faded, he said, I felt that I had known a glimpse of understanding of perfection. It was possible to accept unconditionally what is all around, to accept what has been, and to accept what will be. I don't have to fret about the future. I don't have to bemoan the past, and I don't have to wallow in the stuff of life because I'm at peace. There was neither beginning nor end. The Creator and the creation existed as one, and everything is in one moment. Everything is Him. Everything is Allah. Everything is the One. There's no spot where God is not. He had to go up that mountain, merging with the light, with the water, with the air, with the earth, the four elements, to realize that He's part of all of that. So yeah, everything is in one moment. Everything is Him. And that is the secret of predestination for all you Presbyterians. Nothing has ever happened, for everything is already here. Nothing has ever happened, for everything is already here. So God's, this is all God's expression. Well, isn't that a surprise? It's never been about you. It's been about this one life surprising us endlessly anew. So yesterday, my neighbor lady stopped by. And I didn't go to Panoply this year because every time I go to Panoply, I run into people that I haven't seen in 20, 30 years. It's like a whole conference of church people that I haven't seen. And so yesterday, my neighbor who left 20 years ago, she pulls up to the front of the house. She honks the horn. And she wants a tour of the garden. And so surprise, surprise, she moved out of the neighborhood because she wanted to be where there were forests. Because she said, I miss the birds and the trees when there's forests and I'm in Five Points. So she loved her house. She put all these plants out. The new lady that bought it got rid of all her plants. So she was, oh, she got rid of my this. She got rid. I said, you came to look at my garden, not at the garden that you abandoned. So and so she lives. So how is your new garden? She says, well, I can't grow hostas. I can't grow this. I can't grow that. I said, why is that? Because the deer eat them all. I said, oh, how lucky you've got deer now. You wouldn't want the deer in your garden. You wouldn't have any of your pretty flowers. And I said, you know, I love deer. I said, you got exactly what you wanted. You got your birds, you got your forest, you got your deer, but you don't got your plants. It's just the way it is. Surprise, surprise. Anyway. Oh, and lastly, and then I'll do a little closing thing. My husband has this idea that I should watch BritBox on Saturday night to inspire me on Sunday morning. And so he found an award-winning movie on BritBox called Honor, H-O-N-O-U-R, spelled the British way. And I thought, oh, this is a lovely story about honor. Well, it was about a Turkish family, not unlike where he was in Turkey. They were the Kurds. His daughter dishonored his family by going off with a young man that they didn't approve of. And so the family had the daughter killed. True story, in England, because she had dishonored the family. And I said, this is supposed to inspire me for Sunday morning? And then, well, then I realized my beloved Vandana Srivastava, who came here from India, she also fled from India because her father had an arranged marriage. And they say, you don't marry for love, because if you marry for love, you put the love over your family. And girls in the family, in the Islamic tradition, are here to honor and serve their family. So they didn't have the freedom as a young girl. And it's a true story. She and her sister didn't have the freedom to love the one they wanted. Now, the boys could do whatever they want. They could party, they could carouse, they could drink, but the girls had to obey the family. You know the whole thing when they didn't wear the hijab in Tehran, that young girl was killed. Well, it's still something that is in their culture. And when Trey and I were in Vancouver, British Columbia, I remember the headline of the paper was, this young lady had been found dead because the family had a contract out on her because she had dishonored the family. This actually exists in this culture. And so I thought, how can I bring this into, this surprised me. I thought it was going to be such an inspiring movie, and yet it was inspiring because it was being revealed to be healed. Never again.
And so at the end, the sister that survived, she said, this is our whole culture. She said, I left, and she was the younger sister, and she was pregnant, not wed. And she said, I can't go back to my family because I know what my family will do to me. And so through the grace of her willingness to be seen, she stepped out of a societal idea, and surprise, surprise, she set herself free from a toxic pattern. Now, if one young lady can do it, others can. So I realized this British movie, based on a true story and won all these awards, was here to expose something in our culture that is toxic and that needs to end. And then as I'm driving to work this Sunday morning, I hear on NPR how these women are talking about how men should not be telling women what to do with their bodies, just so men could control women. And I thought, it's just like that story, men controlling women in a way that they think that somehow women should be subservient. And you know what? I'm hopeful that these things of the darkness show up so that they can be healed, so that some greater awareness can be claimed. And that's what I'm going to know in this endless practice. We have to be willing to stand up to ignorance and speak the truth. This isn't acceptable anymore. You know, I'm an openly gay man who doesn't have to hide in the closet anymore. Isn't that amazing? In the New Yorker magazine this week, I gave it to Gigi, there's an article about this young man who survived the 70s and 80s when they were coming out condemning the gay community. It started with Jerry Falwell, and that's very interesting. I realized when Jerry Falwell came on the scene, the Christians used to be pro-choice, but when he came on, he said, life begins at conception. So he's the one that started that whole pro-life crazy thing, and he's also the one that said we were an abomination and to condemn the gays. And then Anita Bryant came out and sang about us, and then we fell into the closet. Well, that's no longer the way. You know, and so could we bring the light to the darkness and be surprised? Oh, yeah. I can meet a young trans person and they're beautiful. That young lady from Montana, she was the first elected official from the trans community, and they've censored her from speaking because she said, if you create these laws and ban the books, you are literally killing my community. So what are they going to do? They will silence her. Well, she says, I'm not going to be silenced. She said, if they could see me, they could see what a sweet soul I am. And, you know, they're all our children. So what if this darkness, surprise, surprise, is coming up so the light can embrace it and we can heal by having a greater idea? In this lovely little book, I didn't read you this one section, he said to his student, you will arrive at a place where there are no more religions. Huh. Imagine. No religion. I wonder if you can. Nobody to condemn you and say that you're born in sin. So I think with that, I'm going to invite Raul to the mindfulness bell. He's so sweet. He holds his wife's hand. Don't you love to be someone holding your hand? It's such a sweet thing to hold the hand of a friend. Yeah. Oh, there's that sweet bell again. For whom the bell tolls, Ernest Hemingway says. The bell tolls for thee. And the bell, when I studied with Thich Nhat Hanh, they would ring it throughout the day. And when they rang the bell, you would stop whatever you were doing. And you would take a deep conscious breath and you would align to that still place within, to the knower within, to the peace within. And just rest there. And if anything should arise, it arises in that field of peace, in that field of divine love. And so we don't have to exile those parts of ourselves that we have somehow decided are less than adequate. We can invite them into that field of love. So if there's an anxious part of us and there's a lot of anxiety on the planet, well, that anxiety gets to be embraced by the love that we are. If there's confusion, and there is a lot of confusion out there, we can bring that confusion into the clarity of now. I don't have to have the answers for the world. I don't have to solve problems outside myself. I get to open to a place within where there is no problem. And let that be the fashioning factor for this life. It says in the Bible, whatsoever things are of good report, think on these things. And so we place our attention on the good, the God, the gratitude,
for the very life that we've been given. And when the shadow arises, when the unhealed stuff surfaces, we get to redeem it by inviting it to awaken within us the good, the God, and the blessing. I hear Emma Curtis Hopkins. This too is good. This too is for God. And I demand to see the blessing. And whatever life provides as the teacher, it is all here for our transformation. So we use it. So we pause and we smile because we have arrived in that sacred space that will never abandon us, never leave us, never forsake us. It just waits for our attention. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. Take a deep integrating breath. And let's say to one another, I honor you. I respect you. I love you. You are the emerging presence of the one life, flowering uniquely, blessing us all in beautiful ways, surprising us all the time. And so it is.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. More information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.